Hey, all you fans of the Speed Force, this is Kenny Johnston. I played Barry Allen, The Flash, in the TV movie Justice League of America. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
I am zooming on in here today. Welcome, superhero fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. It's February, and you know what that means. It's flashback, flash forward February, my annual month-long salute to the fastest man alive, The Flash. And this week, Scarlet Speedster in the lair. All right, you folks know that I have welcomed quite a few of the actors who have portrayed The Flash. I've welcomed them right here to the Comic Book Central lair. John Wesley Shipp, The Flash from the 1990 series. He's been here several times over the years. Rod Haas, live-action Flash from Legends of the Superheroes. He was here 2 years ago when I started Flashback, Flash Forward February. I chatted with the man who provided the voice of The Flash on my favorite Saturday morning cartoon, Super Friends. Legendary voice actor Jack Angel, he was here. Last February, Kid Flash, Kenan Lonsdale stopped by, as did the voice behind The Flash from Justice League Action, Superman, and The Batman, Charlie Schlatter. So a lot of Flash actors over the years. Today, okay, we've got a Flash again for Flashback, Flash Forward February. This is going to be a cool episode. Going back to 1997 today. Again, live-action superheroes, the Justice League of America. The man who suited up in the red and yellow, actor Kenny Johnston. He's going to be speeding into the lair today to talk about his time playing The Flash. You're going to hear from Kenny in just a few moments. But first, folks, I mentioned just a few of the amazing talents who have dropped by over the years on the show. Over 250 celebrity guests have stopped by to chat. If you missed any of those episodes, then after today's show, you're going to want to go back and check out comicbookcentral.net. The archive, all episodes are waiting for you there. If you click that iTunes tab on the website, on the homepage, you can subscribe to the show. The episodes are waiting for you there as well. There's social media tabs, Facebook and Twitter. I post the episodes there every week on those two sites. Share the lair on social media, if you would be so kind to do that. Share those posts each and every week. For those of you out there doing that, I truly appreciate it. Blueberry, Stitcher, Google Play, you can find all episodes there. And blogtalkradio.com, new platform for the show this season. Over 200 episodes, more than 250 guests chatting about our favorite topic, bringing comic books to life on television, movies, animation, video games, you name it. If you missed any of the episodes, they're all there. A lot of great conversations, so check them out. So glad you are not missing this episode. It is Flash Month, and The Flash is here. Check this out, then I will be right back in a flash with The Flash, Kenny Johnston. Before Ezra Miller flashed across the big screen in last year's Justice League, we had the Scarlet Speedsters in Justice League of America. All right, imagine another Earth in another time. Hey, we've seen the Flash travel back and forth through time. We've seen him travel to different Earths, so just play along, okay? Stay with me. The time's 1997. We're on a parallel Earth where the characters of the Friends TV show were played by different actors, and they all had superpowers. And the series was called Justice League of America, and it ran for years and years and years. All right, okay, that's a different Earth. On our Earth, it was a pilot TV movie for CBS. It wasn't picked up. It aired only once in the UK. But check this out. It's got Green Lantern. It's got Martian Manhunter, The Atom, Fire and Ice, and a version of the Weather Wizard called The Weatherman. And it's got The Flash. Hot on the heels of the Joel Schumacher Batman flicks, you know, the ones with Val Kilmer and George Clooney, CBS tried another crack at the superhero game, again, with The Flash, but this time surrounded by the Justice League. Well, they didn't have Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. I mean, come on, they were saving those characters for the big screen. But they had a lot going on in this. The pilot episode featured MASH's David Ogden Stiers as the Martian Manhunter. He was leading a group of 20-somethings as the familiar DC Comics superheroes, including The Flash, played by actor Kenny Johnston. Now, leading up to the JLA pilot, Kenny was cast in a bunch of TV guest roles, including Law & Order, Boy Meets World, News Radio, and Clueless. In Justice League of America, Kenny brought the character of Barry Allen to life, but it wasn't the Barry Allen from the comic books. Kenny's version of the superhero was slightly less employed and slightly less focused.
I'm really just a regular guy, I guess. I like bowling, football, watching the tube. Well, I really like the bowling. Guess I haven't figured out those life and career decisions yet, but why rush it?
Good work, Flash.
Thanks. Who do we save next?
Storm's over. We're done rescuing people for the day.
What was that all about?
I don't know, but you think that weatherman's for real?
Nobody can manipulate the weather. It's impossible.
No. Finding a job is impossible.
Still no luck?
None. And I just lost my apartment. God knows where I'm going to stay tonight.
But he was definitely a superhero.
This is absolutely incredible. The Flash is slowing down the wind speed by creating a countercurrent. What would New Metro do without the Justice League?
Now, Flash Month here at Comic Book Central always gets an extra jolt of lightning when we get a visit from the Scarlet Speedster himself. This time around, it's the Flash from 1997. In addition to acting, he is also a writer, producer, director. A Flash-tastic welcome to Kenny Johnston. Kenny, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be here. Thank you.
You're doing all kinds of things. Look, a lot different than your character in the 1997 movie. You've got to be a speedster to do all those things, right?
Yeah, you got to stay busy in Hollywood. You got to stay one step ahead, 1 foot ahead, you know, as you say.
How do you do that? I mean, I'm looking at your IMDb page and there's like so much. I mean, I know you're doing like some independent films. I know you've got your own stuff going on. You're writing, you're doing all these things. How many balls are in the air are you juggling right now?
Geez, it's going to be hard to count. Let me see, probably about five or six that, you know, I'm writing with friends. Producing, developing. It's really kind of a revolution these days in terms of actors and you know, producers and writers being able to produce their own content, being that there's so many avenues now. You know, there's the web and there's a lot of cable channels, and you know, cameras aren't that expensive anymore to get a high def camera. So I think it behooves every actor in LA, you know, who's sitting around waiting for that call to, you know, try to write something and put something up. So that's what we're doing, and that's what I'm doing. And, you know, I do have a few pretty high-profile projects coming out besides my, you know, my smaller independent stuff. I just did a film that opened Friday in Mexico. It's a Mexican film. It's called La Región Se Javi, which in English is The Untamed.
Is this the shot we saw on your Facebook page where you're, like, in a cowboy garb or something? Is that different?
That's different. That's the same company I did a few years ago.
Okay.
Called the River of Gold, which was also a Mexican film, but I played American soldier in the Union Army down in Mexico.
At what point did you realize? Because, like you mentioned, it's a whole different landscape for actors, writers, producers in Hollywood now. It's like people are doing their own things. At what point did you realize, like, look, I don't have to go on all these, you know, auditions and that. Like, I'm just going to do my own thing. At what point did you realize that, and what steps did you take? Like, how does somebody do that?
Well, it's a good question. Back in the day, I got fascinated with film, probably in the mid-90s. You know, I went to see a lot of foreign films. Somebody turned me on to a foreign film, and I never really paid attention to one before, and it blew my mind. And I was like, wow, holy cow, and it was an independent small production, and it really inspired me. So I went out and got a little 16-millimeter camera back when film, you know, was the, you know, pretty much the only method to shoot stuff on.
Yeah.
And I just went out and learned the camera, and I shot a couple of short films on it. And I learned, you know, kind of put myself through my own film school kind of thing. And that was it. And I was hooked, you know, into filmmaking and acting also. You know, I was making a living acting. So I would kind of, you know, do some acting projects. And in the meantime, I would pick up the camera and we would just go out and shoot whatever, you know?
Okay. Cause we see, like, you're still like, you'll pop up on Modern Family and things like that. And we'll see, like, so you still keep your foot in that world, but it's like, it's so cool to see people like kind of taking charge and doing their own thing. Who are you using to bounce things off of? Because if you're in such a bubble, it's kind of hard to see whether or not things are going the right way or not? Like, who do you kind of look at to say, is this, am I heading in the right direction on this? Especially at such an early age, you're talking like mid 90s and maybe late 90s.
Yeah, exactly. I have a friend who we kind of started out together. His name is Amat Escalante, and he made the movie The Untamed, which just opened in Mexico. His features are doing really well. They're pretty much Mexican productions, but he does have Americans in most of them. And he won the Venice Best Director Award last year, and his second feature won the Best Director in Cannes in 2013. So he's doing great. So I think I bounce pretty much almost everything off of him. Anything that I'm going to put money into, anything, you know, anything kind of big that's not like, hey, let's just go out and shoot a 2-minute webisode and see what happens. So any, you know, bigger scale ideas I have, I always kind of bounce off him. And nowadays, you know, if you have a feature idea, the kind of plan B with it is like, well, maybe it could be, you know, a mini series or a cable series, because I think that's what a lot of people are doing now. They're writing a feature and they can't get it made, and then they cut it up into 4 episodes or something like that, and they may be able to sell it to, you know, Amazon or Netflix. So pretty much I bounce everything off of Amat, and I do have a couple of friends, filmmakers in town, you know, that I can bounce things off of, but he's my go-to pretty much.
These streaming services have really just changed the game, haven't they?
Yeah, it's really amazing. At the same time, the sitcoms used to be very big and TV used to be very big for me. That was my bread and butter. And that kind of started to die out with reality television. And, you know, I think Hollywood and actors panicked. And it's almost a great thing that cable got big and Amazon and Netflix, because it gives a lot of people who made, you know, who kind of were character actors or who didn't do the big budget movies, were kind of your blue collar actor folks, you know, it gave them a new life in a way, because a lot of, as you probably know, a lot of celebrities started to take the guest star roles in TV, and it knocked everybody down the food chain, so to speak, in a way. So it's, you know, thank God it's for all these new avenues, you know.
I find it so ironic that you mention about the reality TV, because that's kind of the basis of your Justice League movie.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll talk about that. I just, when you mentioned that, I'm like, boy, that is ironic right there. Okay, so which role do you prefer? That's funny. Do you prefer in front of the camera, behind the camera, behind the scenes writing, you know, behind your laptop, storytelling? What do you prefer?
I don't fashion myself a writer as much as I would like to. So this year I really am going to focus on taking some writing classes, because I love when I'm, you know, I get a whole story, you know, a short film story in my mind, and I'm able to write it, and I'm like, wow, that's not bad. A feature is a whole different animal, you know, because you have to have kind of 3 acts. It has to be at least, you know, 80, 90 pages. So I don't really fashion myself as a writer yet, but I really would like to, you know, hone that, that talent. But comedy, in front of the camera, comedy is my favorite thing in the world. And when it's good, like Modern Family, something like that, I get to do a guest star or something. It's just really fun.
Okay, so what was the interest early on then? Because I see, like, not unlike my guest from a couple of weeks ago, Vito D'Ambrosio, I see a ton of athletic skills in your background. So what was the interest early on? Sports? Was it storytelling? Like, what did you want to be when you grew up?
It was actually, I was going to be a cop, actually. I grew up in upstate New York. And there wasn't too many, you know, if you didn't go to college and get a good degree, your only option was cop or correctional officer, because all the prisons are upstate New York. And I didn't, you know, I was like, well, I guess I'll do that. Maybe I'll transfer down to New York City and become a city cop. And then one night, right after I graduated high school, I was home one night and Raging Bull was on. And I remember remembering when it came out in the theaters. This was the late 80s. And I was like, oh, I'll watch it on TV, and I hope I catch the part where he beats up his brother, because I remember that was really good. And sure enough, I turned it on, and the scene, you know, after Jake LaMotta, Robert De Niro won the title, he has this fight with his brother because he was jealous. He thinks his brother had an affair with his wife, and he beats him up. And I realized I never looked at a piece of film that way, of just that whole 10 minutes of a progression of a character. And I was just really, you know, I was awestruck, and a big light bulb went off. I'm like, oh my God, maybe that's what I can do. Maybe I could act and get out of this small town and, you know, go do something greater than just, you know, being kind of a cop up there. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but just all my family was, and I knew, you know, a lot of them weren't happy. So So that's what did it. That was the inspiration, the movie Raging Bull. And I never looked back. I changed all my courses in college from criminal justice to acting. I went down to the city. I took some classes at HB Studio, which was the Herbert Berghoff studio. And that was it.
So the original intent was to become a police officer like Barry Allen, but even your character didn't become one.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, you got so much in common with your version of Barry Allen too. Improv with the Groundlings.
Improv. I just took the first two courses this last couple of years, and I'm looking forward to continue with it. I'm going to take a little break. Like I said, I'm going to focus on writing.
Oh, okay. That's recent? The improv stuff is recent?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I think I took the basic about a year and a half ago, and then I took the second one about a year ago.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was early on in your career or if that was something more recent. So, interesting. Okay.
No, I should have. Looking back, I'm like, why the heck didn't I take improv as soon as I moved to L.A.? Because I'm in class, and I see all these kids at 19 and taking it. I'm like, I'm so stupid. I should have took it when I was 19.
Wow. That's, because there's so many do that. Guest shots at a bunch of shows early. You mentioned a lot of different things, including a guest role on Clueless with Alisa Donovan. Mm-hmm. Okay, so did you tip her off to Justice League in a couple of years after that, or did she tip you off to Justice League, or was it just sort of happenstance that you guys were together in an episode?
Yeah, it just sort of happened. We actually had mutual friends when we did Clueless. We kind of knew each other from a mutual friend. And then just when I saw her on Justice League, it was like, oh my God, I'm so glad that, you got it.
Oh, okay.
And it was just happenstance, yeah.
When did you first hear about the pilot for Justice League of America? This is a CBS pilot. They were starting this up. What was the first indication you had that there was some superhero thing coming down the pike?
Just my agent at the time. I was in her office, actually. I was up there, talking to them, and she just got the call. She handed me the script, I think. I think it was old fax paper, actually, or something. And she goes, oh, I think this is a really good role for you. And I remember the Justice League, from a kid, the comic book. And immediately I'm like, oh, my God, I love that. I'm going to get this thing. And it was right there. I'm like, I'm going to do whatever I can to get it. And it turned out that I got it.
So. Okay, so you'd read some comics as a kid then.
I did. We had a bunch of comic books. I wasn't as into them as much as my brother. But, I remember the basic, the Justice League and the other one at the DC Comics and stuff like that.
Were you a Marvel guy or a DC guy?
I can't really remember. I think I was both. I really wasn't one or the other. I just read whatever comic books my brother would let me
read.
Good.
That's what we want to hear. Yeah. all comics are cool. Okay,
all comic books, yeah.
So your agent comes to you. Here's the script. Because it's so funny because you go back to like superhero stuff in the 90s. It is such a mixed bag. I mean... I know Batman, the Joel Schumacher Batman movies were big at the time. What was the pitch you got? I'm interested because I know when I watch it, what I get from it. What was the pitch that you got as to what they intended to do with this?
The pitch that we got was, at the time, Friends was a very, very popular show.
I knew that was coming. So, that's exactly what I knew.
We were excited because, it was like... the Justice League meets Friends. We're going to make them a little more personable. They're going to know each other. They're going to have kind of this friendship, this camaraderie like Friends. And we were all for it. We're like, oh, yeah, that's going to be great and different. And then we started shooting it, and they were seeing some of the dailies, some of the scenes from previous days, and they weren't happy with it. So
CBS?
CBS, the executive producers, and so they hired a different director, and we went back and we reshot some scenes. So we were that made us a little nervous. We were like, oh, okay. And, I don't think that the new director gave it anything fresh. And I think in the process they were feeling like maybe it wasn't really happening the way that they wanted to. So I think they shot it out and they put it together the best they could, and they did kind of make it like Friends. And very kind of funny, and I don't know if it went over enough to make it into a series. Obviously,
Okay, so the director listed is it Felix Alcala or Alcala?
Alcala, yeah.
Alcala.
Yeah.
So was that the one that got fired, or was that the one that came in?
He's the one that came in.
Okay, who was the original director?
I can't remember his name.
Okay, but for some reason it wasn't hitting the notes that they wanted it to hit.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I found one. I see so many reviews online. It's so funny because the one that jumped out of me was super powered and semi unemployed group. That pretty much sums it. Were you the Joey Tribbiani of the Justice League?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Exactly. How you doing?
Hey, and you know, I know Matt LeBlanc from New York, and we used to go up for a lot of the same roles. So I went up for Friends, and I don't know how close I got, but
were you going for the Joey Tribbiani role on Friends?
Yeah, of course.
You got it as Barry Allen.
I know. But he had more work than I did.
He did. Yeah, he got it. He got a 10-year run out of it. So
yeah.
So when you look at this thing, so it's based. And again, you kind of go into this when we go back to that time period. The comic books written by Keith Giffen and JMD Matias, the JLA books, they did have humor in them. There was like sort of this team up, but. Yeah, it's interesting when you mention Friends because it's like you don't really think of JLA comedy right off the bat. It's okay. So you mentioned New York. Is it set? It's set in New Metro. Was it supposed to be New York?
I'm not really sure. I think so. I think it's a fictitious metropolis.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, because like all of you guys have New York accents. It's obviously shot in LA, but it's like all you guys have New York accents.
Yeah. So I think it's always kind of like with some Eastern city, whether it's like kind of a mixed mosh of Chicago and New York or Boston or, but you know, it just is. But yeah, I think for the most part, I think Metropolis is thought of as being maybe on the East Coast. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if they were like telling you guys you needed to come up with a New York City vibe or something or what, but, so you go into,
I think they actually cast us because we all did have a New York kind of a vibe.
So. Got it. Okay. So they kind of wanted, New York feel to it. Okay. So take us through the audition process. You're going in, like, you know, it's The Flash, you know, it's Barry Allen, you know, it's spandex, you know, the whole thing going in, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. When, and I was excited. I was in great shape at the time, so I was ready.
Okay. So what do you do to go in to become a superhero? Like, how do you? Because it's got to be so totally different than any other acting gig you've been preparing for.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, I kind of knew that they were going for the the unemployed fun actor or Friends kind of vibe. So I played against the superhero role, and I just played somebody very relatable. Who had a tough time making a living and just a really nice, fun guy. And they responded to that. And I don't even know if they read, many of these when we're in costume superhero roles. I think they were looking more for the fun side of the character. And so they responded to that. And so I just kept giving them that, and, with my little comedic flair and my, you got to love the guy, kind of thing. And they really liked it. So
did you know much about the comic book version of The Flash? Cause there's the Barry Allen. You're definitely not a forensic scientist. This guy.
Yeah.
It seems like a little bit closer to the Wally West version. Did you know anything about the comic books, or did you just I get the whole unemployed thing.
No, I did as much research as I could. Internet wasn't around then, so I did research the Barry Allen version. And there was a Flash TV show that was short-lived, and I was able to get my hands on that. I think it was maybe on Fox, and it was for a season.
CBS? Yeah, CBS gave it a shot.
Was it CBS?
Yeah, actually, right. The Simpsons tanked it, the Fox show tanked, because they went up against the Simpsons.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
So I was able to get, I think, VHS copies of that, and I watched that, and I got a lot from that, just the storyline and what's going on with them. So I was able to get most of, the research from that.
Oh, okay. So were you watching this thing going, wait a minute, I'm not a cop in this one? Like, because John Wesley Shipp, I mean, he's a cop.
Yeah, but then I knew that there was a scientist, and, I was wondering which way they were going to go with it, but obviously in the art thing, he wasn't either. He was an unemployed guy. He was trying to get a job, any job.
Well, that makes sense, because you did have the scientist, where you had the Ray Palmer version, So, yeah, I guess two scientists would have been too much.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That totally makes sense. Okay, so how did they – so when you're coming in – because there's so many different mishmashes of things. Is there like – when did you find out about the confessional thing? Like that this would be – or was that sort of on the fly? Was that – like how did that come about? Because it's so different. Like, because the way it's shot, it's not like a straight up superhero action flick. It's like there's these confessionals. It's almost like When Harry Met Sally meets MTV's The Real World, and like you guys have these like in studio little confessions to the camera things. Was that right off the bat, or did that develop later?
No, I think that was written into the script, and okay. I think we even did some of that in the audition process. And at the time, we thought it was great because I think Real World was kind of still popular, and people were starting to do stuff like that. So I think they thought that was kind of new and fresh, and I thought it kind of was fun. I mean, for what they were going for, I think it fit. You know?
Yeah. Did they test you out in the suit before you got the role, or only after you got the role?
After they got the role, after I got the role, they tested me out. I'm not sure. It's been a while. They may have, when we tested, I think all of us tested, and I think we were the only ones testing. So I think they were pretty much ready to go, but we had to go meet the studio. That's the last step of the process. It's called a test. And, a lot of the studio execs kind of meet in a room, and they have you read a few scenes just to make sure everybody's on board. And I think at that same day was on Warner Brothers, one of their back lots. We went into a makeup trailer, and they tried on certain plates for me, like a chest plate and the head thing. And it was actually a lot of leftover from the movie Batman that I think they did the year prior.
Okay, that's what I want to ask about, because when you watch this thing, the masks look very, all of them look very similar to the Batman, the Joel Schumacher Batman films. Was that, so were they actually using molds from that movie, or what? Like,
I think they were actually using some of the actual pieces. I think
spray paint them red, spray paint them green.
Yeah, they shaved off the ears, maybe, and I think I happened to be a fit. So
yeah, because that movie came out in '97, didn't do as well, and then all of a sudden you guys are on the lot. So they found a way to repurpose those costumes, all the masks.
Yeah.
I know, it's crazy. Okay, so do you recall like the first day you were in the suit?
The first day I was in the suit it was a test. I think maybe a week later after we went and did our final audition, it was a week later. We found out pretty quick after that day. We had to go meet the execs. I think we found out that night, and then we went in the next week, and they wanted to look good. The others, they wanted them all to look good, but they were really focused on getting mine first. Just because maybe the Flash was the most popular at the time. I don't know. So they got us in it, and they saw us walking around. It was a little tight, they kind of modified. And finally it took them maybe about three different wardrobe fittings to finalize it.
Okay. Your first reaction in the suit, what am I doing? Or, oh man, I can't believe how awesome this is. Like, which, or did you fall somewhere in the middle?
Yeah. It was, thank God I have a chest plate, because I thought I was in shape. But when you put spandex on your whole body, you're like, whoa, I don't look anything like Batman. Yeah, give me that chest plate.
It's not forgiving.
Spandex, yeah, not exactly. Forgiving. So it was great. The chest plate, and they give you the washboard thing, for your stomach. And I was psyched, because it feeds you. It makes you feel like a superhero when you have all that stuff on,
Okay, so as an actor, because we talk about this with actors all the time, especially like in Star Trek and things, and they get it. A lot of people don't like the makeup, the whole process of things, but is that just that really goes toward your performance too, doesn't it?
Yes, very much, very much.
I mean, whenever you're putting that on and you're in those scenes, with the other actors, because you guys are in the costumes a lot in the movie. I'm actually surprised. I thought they maybe like here and there, but it's like you guys are in the costumes a lot. I mean, how much does that do for you guys just all even coming together as the Justice League?
It was great for me. I think me and I can't remember if the Green Lantern or Adam. Is it the Adam or Adam?
The Adam.
I think we had the most plates on, the most things to wear.
Yeah, he's got like a football uniform on.
Yeah, exactly. At first we were nervous because I think it was around the summer, so it was hot. We were worried about sweat and dehydration, but we put them on and we walked around. They were working on my boots. Like, they had a problem with really finding a good, a good looking boot for me, because some of them, they look too effeminate. So they had to find something that looked kind of cool, and it went all the way up to my knee, and they finally got them. And once I put those on and once I put my gloves on, I felt like, hey, let's go kick butt, So we would walk down the back lot of Warner Brothers, in like a V formation. Like, yeah, who wants trouble? We got it. We got it.
You get that shot at the end. And
exactly. And it was a lot of fun at that point, you know. And when we shot around the city, we shot downtown a bit. We shot in Studio City a bit. That, you know, kids were like, oh, my God. And that was the greatest thing. Just, you know, kids, the moms walking their kids and they would see us. They would just stop, you know, and their eyes would get big. And it really felt really cool. Like, hey, how you doing, son? You know, go to school. Make sure you do your homework kind of thing, you know?
Okay, so that's what I wonder, because there's a lot of shots with you guys rescuing kids. Were you, like, interacting with them, like, as superheroes? Like, eat your vegetables and, you know, drink your milk?
Well, the kids that are actors, they're already kind of desensitized. So they're like, yeah,
jaded.
I don't talk to you, man. Yeah, when's lunchtime, you know, kind of thing, so...
call my agent.
But it was cool. There was a few shots where we had to deal with a lot of kids, and some of the kids were really fascinated by the costumes.
Okay.
You know?
It's interesting because, you know, obviously it's a pilot. It didn't get picked up, but did they talk to you about what they wanted? Because, I mean, nobody sets out to make a pilot that doesn't air. I mean, it aired in the UK, but not here in these states. Obviously they're making this to go, okay, let's get at least a 22-episode run out of this. What were they telling you guys about what they wanted to do with the series? Did they have any conversations? Were the origin stories going to come in? Because we only get a couple of brief origins here.
Yeah, they did. I think they had a few scripts, complete scripts, and I think they had ideas through 9 or 13 episodes.
Oh, wow.
And okay. And I know, I can't remember the Scott, the executive producer, it might have been Scott Shepherd. He was a big golfer and I was too. So we played golf a little bit and he was very excited. He thought that it was going to go at least 9 or 13 episodes. You know, they thought that the pilot would be 45 minutes, you know, an hour with commercials. And he was very sure. He was like, yeah, they're going to order 9 or 13. I'm pretty sure it's going to, you know, and it's going to, you know, we're really going to develop it and we're going to, you know, see how it tests. You know, I think they get groups, you know, and test it on different, what do you call those groups?
Oh, focus groups.
Focus groups and, you know, and kind of, you know, see if the comedy is working and should we pull it back or whatever. But he was pretty confident that it was going to go. And then I think he started to have meetings with the higher ups and I think they weren't digging the unemployed kind of cool friends group that were superheroes. I think that's what happened in the end.
It's so different from the comic book. So that's why, I mean, look, if you're going to swing for the fence, right? I mean, you got to, that's, you know, go completely in that direction. I'm interested too, the fact that, you know, well, we unfortunately lost Miguel Ferrer last year. Who was, you know, amazing in the film. He plays the weatherman.
Yeah.
It's a version of the weather wizard or something. But we all know he's like a huge fanboy. He's a buddy of Mark Hamill's and Bill Mooney's. You know, they were into comic books and all these different things. Did you get a vibe from him or did you have any conversations with him on set as to like, oh, we're doing a comic book movie? Like, that had to get him stoked.
Yeah, he was excited. He was like a little kid. I swear to God. Every time, you know, we would go to, you know, we'd go to a screening or a dinner or a function, He had a smile on his face all the time. He was so excited to be the villain in this and to be a part of it. He talked to the executive producers a lot about comic books, you know, the writers, because obviously they were all comic book junkies. So, so he was really excited. He was such a sweetheart. You know, he was really really supportive for the whole process and he was great in it. I thought he played a great villain.
And it looked like he might be the big baddie moving forward. Like, cause he escapes at the end or sort of escapes at the end. So it looked like he was going to come back and haunt you guys.
Yeah, exactly. So you didn't kind of know what was going to happen.
So no pun intended, multiple jobs. You're out of work all the time. Was that supposed to be a running joke in the series?
Yeah,
for the Flash.
Yeah, I can never get a job. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So like each episode, you were going to have like a new job?
A new job that kind of ended quickly. I was always going to be kind of relying on them to, you know, to have a place to stay, to kind of like, hey, can I stay at your place tonight? And they're like, oh, sorry, I got, you know, so.
Okay.
It was going to be, I was kind of the nuisance kind of guy.
The bum, yeah, the always crashing on the couch.
Yeah.
The friend that nobody, You mean counselor down at the group home. It ends with you being a counselor down at the group home. I don't even know what that is. Like, do you even know what that is?
No, not
okay,
really.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Look, did you guys have fun shooting it? What was your experience shooting it?
It was great. I mean, we were all, you know, it's a pilot for, you know, Warner Brothers, CBS. It's a Justice League of America was, you know, was one of the biggest comic book themes there are. So we were excited, you know, just to be a part of something that could be groundbreaking, could be huge, could have a long run. So we were just enjoying pretty much all the time, 24/7. The effects, you know, they were a little tough, the effects, because, you know, we weren't quite sure what they were going to be, and they were changing a little bit, the ideas as we were going along. So we just left it all up to them. I think the effects were good for the time. I think looking back, they may have been campy. You know, I'm not sure, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure how CBS felt about them. But, you know, we were hoping in the end that, you know, if they didn't look as good as we hoped, then maybe people would think it was camp and go with that. So, I'm not sure how, you know, I read a lot of reviews as well. I'm not sure about, you know, in the end what the reviews were about about the effects, but.
Grant Gustin's always talking about The Flash, like how, like, you enter a scene and exit a scene. Like, there's ways he, like, did they give you Flash training, like, how to enter a scene and exit a scene for the effects? Or was it just, like, make it up as you go?
A little bit make it up as you go. And, you know, I was running fast. I'm like, you know, I'm going to move my arms and legs. So in the blur, you can see, like, my legs and my arms and legs moving with a blur behind me.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, after we filmed a few days, he's like, no, you go slow. It's almost like if you go in slow motion, it looks better. I'm like, why didn't you tell me 6 days ago? But so we all kind of, you know, made it up as we went along. I figured it out in a couple of days, how to, you know, exit kind of like, you know, like a rubber band, you kind of stretch back a little bit and then go pew kind of thing.
You did do that. There's a scene where you like wind up.
Yeah,
I didn't know. Okay. I was wondering about that. Okay. What reaction did you get from David Ogden Stiers when he's doing this? Cause that had to be a really interesting note on his resume.
He fully embodied the character. You know, his voice is amazing. So we were lucky to have him again. You know, we were all hoping that this could be a long running series. So we all took it very seriously. He was very excited to be on the set. And, you know, I think he was a comic book follower to some degree. He knew the whole story and
interesting.
He was definitely prepared. Yeah.
I would not have guessed that. I would have thought like all classical music and different things.
Yeah.
Maybe
he faked it and did his research and came to the prod, you know, on board with like, oh yeah, I know all this stuff. So,
well, at least he did his homework. That's the good thing too. And you guys have a pretty cool set with, I don't know if it's supposed to be the Watchtower, but I guess it's his spaceship docked under the water or something like that. So, I mean, at least you guys had some crazy cool sets to work with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that looked really good. I thought in the pilot, you know, when you would see the spaceship underneath the water, I thought that looked great.
Yeah,
and inside the set inside looked great.
Have you ever seen the finished film?
I did. Yeah, I had a copy of it for a while, but it was on VHS. I think somebody gave me a DVD copy, but it doesn't look so good.
Where did you get your... I know where I got my DVD copy. I got it off a table at a convention. So somebody got you one?
Somebody got me one. I think they ordered it. You can order them on the internet.
Yeah.
I don't know if CBS sees any of that money, but...
No. Of course they don't. No. Do you ever go to, like, comic book conventions? Do you, like, see it on the table or something? Like...
No, I think back, you know, when you know, I think it aired in the UK and it aired in Mexico, like the bootleg version aired in Mexico.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I got some invitations, but I was working and I wasn't able to make them, but I didn't get very many. John Cassier, who played the Atom, he's the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, the voice, yep.
So he goes to all those things, and I think he kind of he took advantage of those invites. I think he went and promoted it a little bit.
Okay, so that was your Justice League movie 20 years ago. I'm curious if you've seen the current Justice League movie.
No, I haven't. I wanted to go see it. I live right by Hollywood and Highland. I was going to walk up and see it on IMAX, but I missed it. But I'll probably see it, you know, when it comes to on demand. I'm excited.
Okay, I always wonder, like, you know, like, do you look like I'm not going to watch that? That's, you know, or is it I can't wait to see what they do? Okay, because I didn't know if you saw Ezra Miller.
Yeah.
And okay, so let me ask you this too about, you know, we'll wrap things up here. I want to ask you about this. Okay, The Flash is a huge hit on the CW. They're doing stunt casting all the time. Like John Wesley Shipp and all the folks from the original Flash series are back. They're popping up all over the place. Mark Hamill's back. There's, you know, have you reached out? Has your agent reached out? Has anybody talked to you about maybe, I don't know, like, you know, like you show up at Star Labs looking for work, like it's out of work guy
That's so funny. Yeah.
My name is Barry Allen or something like
yeah.
that.
Harry Allen or Gary Allen.
No, you know, that's a good idea. You know, I should have him do that. I know it's been on a few seasons now, right?
Yeah,
I should do that. That's a good idea. Thanks.
I could just see you showing up like, you know, as like a delivery guy or something, you know, and, you know, like, hey, you guys looking for work? Are you guys looking for a receptionist or something? Or that would be so. Would you be up for that? Would you like? Do you watch the show at all? Like, do you watch?
No, I don't watch that much TV now. The thing is, with all this, you know, the streaming, I'm a binge watcher, so I watch all my shows pretty much streaming, which kind of stinks for the new shows coming out, which, you know, I should be supporting. So,
well, The Flash is on Netflix. You can binge watch all of them.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's on Netflix. Just binge watch all of them. Catch up.
I will. Thanks.
Do that. Well, it would be so cool to see you in there. Okay, so all these latest projects you've got going on, you're doing all kinds of stuff right now. How do we find out? How do we see them? How do we find out what you're up to? Are you on social media? Like, where? How do we find out more about Kenny Johnston?
You can Facebook me, Kenny Johnston, or you can follow my Instagram, which is KennyJohnston777. Which is my favorite number, and I'll have updates about all my new projects and when and where you can see them.
Okay, so the streaming services, wherever they end up on, we can just kind of check those out there?
Yes, absolutely. And I did a film that should be coming out soon. It's a comedy. It's a feature. It's called The Boy, the Dog, and the Clown, and hopefully it'll be hitting the big screen soon. Disney may pick it up, and it may be on the Disney Channel, but either way, I'll put all that information out.
Okay, very cool. And look, I'm asking some of my guests this month. Look, there's a ton of Superman anniversaries going on. It's Flash Month here in Comic Book Central. I got to look, you're the guy that wore the spandex. You're the guy that ran fast. Uh-huh. You're the fastest man alive. Who would win in a race, Superman or the Flash?
Poof. If Superman had a run?
Yes.
Okay, if Superman had a run and you were able to tie his cape down at the bottom, I think the Flash would. I think the Flash, hands down.
Okay.
Not even close.
Flash would take. What else are you gonna say? Right, you're the Scarlet Speedster. Of course you'd win. Kenny.
Yeah, Superman can't fly. It's Flash.
So if he had to fly, you know, Flash is done. He's baked. Kenny, yeah, exactly. I'm telling you what. Flash Month here at Comic Book Central wouldn't be the same without a visit from the fastest man alive. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I got my bootleg Justice League of America DVD right here. If they offered it, if WB offered an official version, I'd buy it. But I'd be the first line to get it. But, you know, this is sometimes we got to get them how we can get them. Had a blast watching the film. I put a picture of it, of my DVD case there up on the Facebook and Twitter. You can check it out. Look, if you Google it, it's not going to be tough to find the movie online. It's out there. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I'm glad we have these projects. Sometimes they're really, really out there versions like this one. But what they were doing was they were keeping these characters in front of the viewers over the years. You know, some worked better than others. Some were really, really cool. Some were less than cool. But what they were doing was they were keeping these superhero projects going. And that led directly into the superhero TV and movie explosion we have today. These guys and gals were laying the foundation back in the day. And thanks to Kenny and his castmates, we've got a Justice League film 20 years ahead of the big screen version. So if you thought Justice League was the first time, no. There's another version out there. And there are some fun moments in it. Look, it's silly, but, you know, it does have some interesting moments. Check it out. Write in. Tell me what you think. joe@comicbookcentral.net. If you've seen it, I'd love to hear what you think of it. Have fun with the movie. And be sure to check out Kenny online. I'll put links to his social media pages in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. Also at blogtalkradio.com. Again, my thanks to Kenny for joining us on the show today. Oh, man, look, it's Flash Month. What would Flash Month be without the Flash, right? He was here. That's pretty cool. All right, kids. Time means nothing to the Flash, but for Superman, man, I got to watch the clock because we are out of time for another week. But Flash Month is not over yet because next week on Comic Book Central. All right. Last week, you heard from actor Devin Gray. He played the Trickster 2.0 on the CW Flash TV series. All right. Well, on the next episode of Comic Book Central, you're going to hear from the Trickster's mom. That's right, she portrayed Prank to Mark Hamill's Trickster on the original Flash series. She returned as Prank, the new Trickster's mom on the new series. She's going to be leaving her Clark's Toys lair to join us right here in the Comic Book Central lair next week. The lovely, the talented, prank herself, actress Corinne Boer. She's going to be here. I know you're not going to want to miss this one. It is definitely a flashback, flash forward episode. To be sure, you do not want to miss it. I'm going to be chatting with Corinne next week. Until then, keep watching out for that 1997 version of the Justice League. It's pretty cool. Keep reading those comics. And thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Besides, I got to get back to my new job. Yeah, they hired me as a counselor down at the group home. Yeah, I've never been so exhausted in my life. Hey, welcome to the club.